Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Stone Payton, Katie Galley here with you this morning. Katie, before we get started, I got to know, have you been able to attack this gender bias that I've seen on Keep Moving Forward, your very own podcast, separate from the Business Radio X Network, but very successful in its own right?
Thank you.
Look, I got to tell you, haven't seen too very many females in the preceding months. Have you done something about this?
I know. I surprised myself because I didn't realize I'd only interviewed men in the space for a while. And so kind of went full on and attacked that. So in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be releasing episodes interviewing women. And so today I interviewed a sports broadcaster, Lindsay McCormick. So I'm releasing that episode later today.
Very cool. So what's been one of the most interesting and fun and rewarding interviews that you've done lately, you think?
I guess last week was a pretty fun one. I interviewed the manager of corporate partnerships for the Atlanta Braves. He was a fun interview. He had a great story, and it was just a great conversation. So in the past, I mean, I haven't really had a bad story, I guess. I mean, since we've been up and running. So
no, I don't think you have. And I was so enamored with the big names. You know, I would see that you'd interviewed Holyfield and Andretti and all these folks. But it's some of the names that I never recognized that were the most insightful conversations. And aside from, you know, at my house, Business Radio X is on 24/7. My kids listen to anything but that, and my wife. But I do personally thoroughly enjoy the show. And I cannot imagine for one minute a Business Radio X listener not being fully aware of your podcast. But will you give it just a little bit of an overview of what you're doing for folks while you're talking to these people?
Thank you very much for the plug.
We'll invoice you later.
Thanks. It's good. So my podcast is Keep Moving Forward, and I interview current and former professional and collegiate athletes who successfully made the transition out of the sporting world and into the real world, whatever that looks like. So if they started their own business, entered into sports broadcasting, entered into the sporting realm in another capacity, or just completely left sports altogether, whatever that looks like, it's how they made that successful transition and how they utilized everything they learned as an athlete to help them make that transition.
And for those of you aspiring guests out there who are wondering if you might get on the show, if you somehow made the high school team, maybe because you had a car and some of the kids didn't, and you hit 190 and you were not even nearly good enough to even try out for a collegiate team, you probably are not the right guest profile because I have not been invited. But it is a lot of fun.
We can talk after the show.
Yeah. But this is a lot of fun, too. What a great way to make a living, to come and do this.
I love it.
Almost every day, right?
Yeah, absolutely love it.
All right. A little bit later in the program, we are going to get a chance to visit with founder and CEO with Porchlight. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Executive Vice President with CDC Federal Credit Union, Mr. Australia Hoover. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Stone. Glad to be here with you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. You really look sharp. Sorry we're not television.
Thank you.
You look great.
Yeah, I was confused about whether or not people can actually see me on the radio. So
yes.
I got my mediums mixed up this morning.
Well, tell us a little bit about CDC, Federal Credit Union, mission, purpose. What are you guys out there trying to do for folks?
Yeah, we are a federally chartered credit union, which basically means, a credit union is a financial cooperative. So it's generally people helping people. And so our mission is really to help those primarily in the life sciences field. Centers for Disease Control is who founded our credit union back in 1949. And we've always served CDC employees and their family and the contractors that the CDC employs to help them do what they do. And so we service the financial needs of folks like them in the metro Atlanta area. We can serve anyone in DeKalb County, portions of Gwinnett and Fulton County. You don't have to work for CDC to be a member of our credit union. And so, we're here just to basically ensure that the financial health of our members are well taken care of.
So it's just specific to the Atlanta area, or do you have branches all over?
We have branches in the Atlanta area, but CDC has members or employees that are stationed all over the world.
Okay.
And so we can service them anywhere that they're located. And so they've got folks in Asia and Africa and You know, obviously all parts of the United States and the Caribbean.
Wow.
And so our roots have basically been to offer services remotely.
Yeah.
We don't have a huge branch network. We do have three branches, two locations that are on the Centers for Disease Control campuses, Clifton Road and Chamblee.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got a public branch in the North Lake Office Park, which basically anybody can easily access that location. You don't need to have the security like you do on the CDC locations. So we're not a huge branch network, but our remote services are top notch, and we can service people wherever they are.
And so what are those services, either the remote ones, the local ones, what are they?
Yeah. So we are a traditional financial institution, which basically means we offer savings accounts, checking accounts, loans, mortgages, anything that you can basically walk into a large commercial bank and get. We offer those same services, but on a much smaller scale, but a much more intimate and human friendly relationship, other than you're not just a number at our credit union. So mm-hmm. So we establish relationships with our members that is really a lot more intimate, and it makes for a better experience financially, I think.
Now, are you working with small business clients as well, or is the focus just on the consumer?
Yeah, we're primarily a natural person credit union, meaning we serve people.
Right.
We do have small business accounts. A lot of the CDC employees will retire or operate a small business on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we service them personally, they come to the credit union for their business needs as well. That's not what our primary focus is at this time, but we're pretty good at it. And we don't take on things that we aren't going to be excellent at. So we're not out shouting that we've got, you know, the most advanced business service suite right now. But mm-hmm. It is something that we've got a competency in.
So from my perspective, it seems like there's a tremendous amount of change, I don't know, over the last couple of years in your arena.
Absolutely.
In the financial services arena. Speak to that a little bit, if you would, and what you guys are trying to do about it.
Yeah. So obviously technology is probably the biggest change that I've noticed in the, you know, 21 years I've been with CDC Federal Credit Union and many years in financial services prior to that. I think technology is really changing every industry, but ours primarily. It was once said that, you know, the banking industry is the next big industry to be taken over by tech. And you see it. Yeah. There are companies making huge investments, financial investments in financial technology. And that's actually a term now. You hear fintech. So financial technology firms are popping up all over the place. Traditional banks are establishing fintech arms. You know, Chase has got, you know, a fintech. You've got Marcus, which is the name of this huge, you know, online presence from a traditional bank player. And so our industry is impacted by that. And then you add to that the Amazon effect. I mean, most people want to hop on a computer or their right. their mobile phone and order something. And so they look at their banker to be able to replicate that experience. And it's not easy because our industry is very traditional and it's got, you know, it's rules of engagement, so to speak.
Well, and you're holding my money, not the pair of slippers that I think might look cute.
So true.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you got
absolutely.
All this regulation, all that piece of it too. So do you feel like that your organization has been able to adapt, embrace, and capitalize on some of these changes?
Absolutely. And I think, like I was speaking to earlier, the fact that we our roots are in servicing folks who are very mobile. If you think about what the CDC does, they go around the world fighting diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And so at any given time, you can be deployed to a place where there's an outbreak. And so holding their money means that we've got to meet them where they are. So our lineage has always been, hey, we might get a call, we might get an email, we might get a fax from a member who needs their needs met financially from afar. And so we were designed sort of with that DNA. So we, I think, have a tremendous advantage because we've been servicing our members that way for the longest time. Now, clearly, there was no internet back, you know, 21 years ago. That
right.
wasn't the primary, and there are no mobile phones that you were banking on. But the mindset of how we serve our members has persisted over the years.
So then how have you said, you know, at the Federal Credit Union, you've been able to adapt and really come as the technology has shifted. But then I guess shifting that and educating people about why they should join you guys. I mean, how do you bridge that gap?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, credit unions nationally, you know, have a very small market share compared to banks. We're about 10%, a little more than 10% of assets. And that's not a lot. So most of the dollars are in banks. So there is a big education gap, I think, that people need to really understand. What are the benefits? And I know within my circles, I'm in the minority by saying this, I don't think that it's an either-or proposition. I've got nothing against banks. I love banks. I think banks serve a very important purpose in society. So it's not, you know, us against the banks, and you hear that all the time. And I'm you know, one to say that you can have both. Establish a relationship with a credit union. Give them a try with some of the services. Maybe you just want to give them a try on the car loan. Credit unions are the second largest financer of car loans in the country.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about it, you know, it's not an all or nothing proposition. It's kind of the point that I want people to take away.
Today. Okay, so I really do want some more detailed education. They're structured differently, credit unions and banks?
Yes, yes. And so being a financial cooperative, the structure of a credit union means that the members own the credit union. And so all of us in this room can go out and buy stock in a bank, right, and benefit from the bank's performance financially. Well, at a credit union, you have to use the services in order to be an owner of that credit union. So, you know, you can't just, there's no stock being sold. And so the structure of the members being the owners means that there are incentives that are removed to harm its members. No one benefits from taking advantage of a member if they own the credit union. Where do those profits go? They go back to the folks that you just harmed, right? So the motivation is completely different. And not to bash banks, but a bank can have stockholders that never set foot in the bank, that you don't have to use the services of the bank to benefit from that bank's operations. You can't do that with a credit union. So I think structurally that gives credit unions an advantage. And the public should know that, you know, I can safely put my money in a credit union and use the services of a credit union and not be taken advantage of.
Now, with a credit union, and I'm using terms I don't really understand, but I see the little gold placard when I go into an institution, FDIC. Sure. Is there still some of that level of protection at a credit union, or at least at yours?
Absolutely, yes. The FDIC is Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which oversees banks. The credit union industry has its own version of that, and it's the NCUA share insurance. And that basically is what protects members' deposits. And so we are a regulated entity, which means we can't go out and gamble your money away.
or if you do and you lose, it's on you.
It's on us, yeah. And we would be shut down very quickly, by the way.
Okay.
And so, yes, your deposits would be insured up to the share insurance limit, just like at a bank. And so your money's safe. The credit union is reviewed. My credit union just finished our federal exam last week. And so
passed.
And we passed with flying colors.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. If we didn't, I wouldn't be sitting here with a smile on my face right now. I can assure you of that. So, yeah, absolutely. It's really, I think, one of the best kept secrets of our country. You know, many of us might know that, oh, my grandpa had a credit union account and he used to go and make his payments down at the branch. And we all have got these stories, you know, but today's credit union is not your grandpa's credit union. I mean, we're very advanced. We use technology. We're interested in making sure that your needs are met, and we anticipate the next need. We're in the data business, just like any other modern company. And so member transactions and the data and the behaviors of members, we've got to understand all of that, while also keeping that personalized service touch. People want to know that when I walk into the credit union, the tellers know me. They know my name. They recognize me. I don't have to pull out my wallet to show my ID. That matters. And I think a credit union can offer those kind of advantages that some of the big banks just can't do it.
And so how did you initially get involved with the credit union? I mean, you've been with them for, you said, 21 years. I mean, that's a long journey, and to be so passionate about it and stay with it. So how did you initially get involved, and what's made you stay around?
Yeah. Well, I kind of just fell into it. I think I went to college, grew up in the Richmond, Virginia area, and didn't know really what I wanted to be when I grew up, and had started off early in my career educationally as an engineer, and said, I'm really not passionate about that. And so studied economics and got a job at Virginia Credit Union. That was my first credit union. And so I worked there for a number of years and just wanted to kind of try it out and see, you know, do I like this? What area of the credit union do I like? And I was just intrigued by the fact that I can use a lot of my education and also see the benefit that I have in helping people every day with real life problems. Mm. When someone can't make, you know, their mortgage payment, or they struggle to put enough food on the table, money management skills, how do you budget? How do I use credit effectively? Those things I felt were real practical life skills that you just don't learn in school. People don't teach that. And I think credit unions offer a unique opportunity to educate people on some of these very important issues. And I think that's kind of what keeps me around, is the fact that I feel like I'm making a difference every day.
Absolutely. And so where do you see or hope the CDC Federal Credit Union goes? I mean, looking back on how far it's already come, where do you guys see it going?
Well, that's a great question. I think, obviously, we've got to remain competitive. And I think every day I recognize that we are competing with alternative options that the public has about where to put their money, how to spend their money. And so it's a very competitive marketplace. So I see us essentially, you know, being true to our roots, meaning we are people helping people. Let's never forget that. Mm-hmm. And I think creating a memorable member experience every day is also important to us. I think people need to feel like, hey, my money's safe, but my credit union is going to be around and they've got my back. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's really what we're going to focus on the next 3, 5, 10 years.
All right. So just one of the things that sounds like you would like to have more ubiquity with is just people having you on their radar. So, you know, maybe Holly and I are getting ready to buy a new car. And, you know, the car place is going to want to loan us some money. The bank is going to want to loan us some money.
That's right.
But we should also, you should be on our radar, right? We should at least have that conversation.
Absolutely. Yes. And not only that, we've got to start that process of engaging with you before you set foot on the car lot, because that's their playground. The dealership knows that
right.
If I get the person here, then I can direct the experience to the cars that I want them to look at, and then the financing options that I've got available at my disposal. And oftentimes, that would not be a credit union option. There are credit unions that have programs known as indirect lending programs, and the dealer could pick a credit union for that person to buy the car.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a crapshoot. You don't know. And so we like to control that process, or at least put enough education in the hands of the buyer before they go shopping, so that they know here's what is going to happen when you set foot on that dealership. And so we even take that a step further and say, well, we've partnered with car buying services that we have vetted so that.
See, I don't think my bank's done that. Or
yeah,
if they have, they haven't.
Right,
studied.
Right. So
wow.
we do that to provide the education. And if something goes wrong with that transaction and you've used one of the partners that we've established up front, we can help you. We can make a phone call. We can ensure that that relationship with that provider is up to the service level that we expect as a credit union, and our members benefit from that.
And that outfit is not going to want to jeopardize their relationship with you, because you are a conduit to a lot of folks.
Absolutely.
So everybody wins in that.
It's a win-win situation. Absolutely. And we've unfortunately, you know, used cars are used cars, and a used car salesman is a used car salesman. They don't make the cars. And so things have gone wrong before with vehicles, and we have
sure.
been able to help our members, hey, get the car replaced, get it fixed, you know, live up to the service standard that you set. On the flip side, we've also had members who have gone out. We will finance a car. If you go to a non-affiliated dealership, we won't stop you. But we've heard some horror stories from folks, and the dealer just won't do the right thing. And unfortunately, there's not a lot we can do to help them in those situations.
But even in that latter scenario, your rates are going to be competitive.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
If not better, typically, right?
Yes. Yes. Better. In most cases, we are better.
Right. But I like the former. I mean, I like the idea of you having a relationship with these services. I like the idea of being better educated before I ever go out on the lot, and knowing that, yeah, the person doesn't want to jeopardize the relationship with me, but they certainly don't want to jeopardize the relationship with you.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that leverage is very important. And a lot of people just don't understand the structure and the nature of that. One entity that we have is a very popular car company that's running a national commercial campaign right now. We've gotten a relationship with them. And I say that because millennials have stated that one of the most irritating parts of buying a car is the amount of time they spend at a dealership.
Yeah.
And it just takes
too
long.
Yeah, us old folks feel the same way.
And us old folks feel the same way. And so we've got the ability to change that experience with some of the relationships we have. And think back again, CDC employees, they're busy. I'm not going to spend a half a day or a whole day at a car lot. So we can have cars delivered to them at work, at home. It's just a different experience for our membership, and we can offer that to anybody. So I just would challenge anyone to really just have a look at the process and understand what your options are before you go and do things the way that your grandpa or your dad did.
So what are the, walk us through the process of becoming a credit union member. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's very easy. At our credit union, you can visit our website, and that's the overwhelming majority of folks who join our credit union today do it online or on a mobile device. Mm-hmm. And so you would go to our website, www.cdcfcu.com, and fill out a membership application. You can complete that application completely online. It'll be securely transferred to our folks. Our agent will call you back acknowledging your application, ask any follow-up questions that there might need to be. You can upload all of the supporting documents that you need. We have a way to verify your identity remotely.
All that's a lot more important than it used to be, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very important.
You got to stay on top of that.
That's right. And unfortunately, fraud is out there. But we've got some good tools at our disposal that allow us to mitigate that risk.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. All right. So you got the uploading of
yeah,
this?
So you can you can essentially establish a membership with our credit union in a matter of minutes. You know, half hour, sit down, fill out the application, upload the information, and you're a member. Other ways, you can call us. We could take an application by phone, or you can walk into one of our locations if you happen to work on the CDC campuses, which most people listening may not. Those that do work on those campuses already know that there's a credit union there. But you can visit our Northleg office in Tucker and open a membership in person as well.
That is fun stuff. Well, keep up the good work, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So what do you need more of now? What can we do to help? Is it simply getting the word out to more and more potential members? Is that really the focus right now?
That really is what it boils down to. And I think just having folks understand that there is there are options out in the marketplace that they may not be aware of. So it's definitely an awareness campaign that credit unions have to overcome. But more so, I think that if you have a credit union and you've experienced something good at a credit union, tell a neighbor, tell a friend.
Yeah.
If you have kids, encourage your kids to go ahead and get their credit union membership established. It'll be a great option to have at your disposal because you never know when you might need it.
Oh, well, that brings up a good topic. So if you can get a kid involved, I'm operating under the impression you don't have to have thousands and thousands of dollars to open up an account. So you don't have to have a whole bunch of money to get started. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. If you've got, in my particular credit union, if you've got $25, you've got a savings account, that's all you need. It won't cost a child any money. There are no fees that are associated with that. That $25 can sit there until they're 50 years old. You can put a dollar a week into the credit union if you want to. It takes very little, and the benefits, I think, far outweigh the sacrifice of what it would take to establish the membership and to have a great financial future, a platform to really build on through teens and adulthood.
Well, and you're giving them, what a gift you're giving them, because now they're in the club, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. And once a member, always a member. If you move away or if you, once you establish that membership, it stays with you for life.
All right. One more time. Someone wants to have a conversation with you or someone on your team. Let's get them the right coordinates, the website, all that stuff.
Sure. Right. So please visit www.cdcfcu.com, or you can call us at 404-325-3270.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Do keep up the good work. We want to follow your progress. And thanks for coming in and hanging with us,
man. Thank you so much.
And thanks for giving me a chance. I tried out that word that Lee was using, ubiquity. I'm not sure I used it right.
You did.
Did you pick up?
You did. Good.
Yeah.
Good job.
Hey, stay with us a few minutes. We're going to visit with one more guest.
I'd be glad to. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us founder and CEO with Porchlight. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Greg Corey. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Delighted. So what'd you learn in that last segment?
Man, I learned a lot. But one of the things I did notice, we have, some of your advice, we have we, the company, has money in a credit union and a traditional bank. So maybe I'm somewhat on the right track.
Good for you.
Now, Porch Light, you're not in the porch light business.
No, not at all. We don't make any porch lights or lights at all. That's right.
So what do you do and why?
Yeah, sure. We are a boutique advertising graphic design firm that specializes in retail packaging and point of sale. So specifically, we even target home improvement industry. So think Home Depot, think Lowe's, Target, Ace. When you walk into these bigger box kind of retail stores, Costco and Walmart, a lot of our stuff will be on the shelves of those stores. You probably have a bunch of them in your garage today, as a matter of fact.
So a natural next question is, why the name Porch Light?
Oh, that's a great little story. Yeah. So there's a couple of stories. And so I'll kind of give you both of them. But number one is when I first started the company, I was trying to think of a name, of course, right? As most people do when they start a company. And I didn't want to call it, Gregory Group or Corey Creative, or I didn't want it to sound like a law firm. So I was trying to figure out something that was a bit different and didn't have my name attached to it. And so, you really start by creating a list of names that you think you like. And, I actually called a writer friend of mine to also help me with this. And, I'd like to say that name was mine that I came up with, but I didn't. It was a name, Porch Light, that he had put on a list. And I never gravitated towards it right off the bat. I wasn't sure if it was the right fit, but I knew I wanted something that kind of had roots in the home improvement industry because that's where my experience came from. And I wanted something kind of smaller, boutique, friendly, approachable. And I just couldn't get it off the list. And then the more I thought about it, and this came kind of after the fact, so the story kind of goes, is that growing up as a teenager, we would go out and we would miss curfew by, an hour or two, right? And the funny thing was, is we'd come home and my dad would wake my brother and I up at 7:30 in the morning, yelling and screaming at us, not because we missed curfew, but because we left the porch light on all night long. And it just kind of, so when I read it and I kind of remember these things, I was like, maybe porch light is the right name. And it stuck.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so how did you get involved then with, so you primarily serve, it's the graphic design. So how did you get involved in that industry and why?
Yeah. So, well, in college I trained graphic design, students. So, that's kind of where I got my, start in graphic design, so to speak. And then my first job actually, well, during college was I was working with at Home Depot, pushing carts in the parking lot. And then once I graduated, I thought it'd be a decent transition to contact their corporate office and say, hey, do you have a graphic design job available? And lo and behold, they did. And wow. So I started my career there actually in Tampa, Florida, and worked in their divisional advertising department and worked there for 2 or 3 years. And, once I did a pretty decent job there, the Atlanta division called, which is where their home office is for Home Depot. They said, hey, we've got a position here in Atlanta. Would you like to move from Tampa and come on up? And I said, yeah, sure. And so, it was really exciting to work for Home Depot in the corporate office. I got to work on a lot of fun, amazing things like, Major League Baseball sponsorships, the Salt Lake City, Winter Olympics, some stuff like that. I worked on, Tony Stewart, the NASCAR campaign that they had a while back. I mean, that's since done and gone, but I had some really good exposure and some national level accounts, and it was a pretty exciting time.
Yeah. What a small world. My youngest, who is studying graphic design and is really kind of finding her groove, she's loving it. It's very applied learning. She's out here at the Art Institute.
Yeah.
Left the deck lights on last night. Honest to God, I'm not making this up.
So did it upset you? Were you like really like
come on, Kelly, all you had to do was unplug the thing, we had, so talk to me about this, what occurs to me to be, a bit of a leap. You got a good job thing going, you got the career, you're getting to do what you studied.
Yeah.
And then you start this business. What was that like, and what counsel, if any, can you offer some of our more aspiring listeners that maybe have a pretty cool little corporate job and they're really thinking about breaking out? Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I could give you a little advice on how to break out. But it didn't happen to me that way. So I didn't choose to leave, an amazing job at Home Depot to go out on my own. In interim there, I actually, after 10 or 11 years at Home Depot, decided it was time for a change, right? Do something different, learn something new, especially since it was my first job out of college. I felt like I needed something different. And I took another job here in town with Newell Rubbermaid. I worked there for about a year or so. And then Newell came to us and said, hey, we're going to move your division to Winchester, Virginia. And I thought, okay, well, I didn't have any plans to move, nonetheless, to Winchester. But, you know, I took a peek. I thought maybe it was close enough to D.C. that maybe I could live in D.C. and kind of commute. And so I went up there and did a house hunting tour with those guys and, you know, kind of came back and said, you know, I don't think I want to move to Winchester. I think I'll stay here in Atlanta and see where it goes. So I was kind of unemployed at that time. So when you choose not to take a job, you choose to quit. So in a roundabout way, I was hunting for a job in the Atlanta market. And when some of my connections that I had left on great terms at Home Depot, so my connections at Home Depot said, hey, we hear you've got some availability. Would you like to do this side project? Would you like to do this piece of business for us? And I was like, absolutely sure. And then, you know, quickly, a couple of years later, I realized that I was really busy, meaning I didn't have time to look for a job any longer. So, and then nonetheless, I started calling some of my friends that I'd worked with saying, hey, I need some help. Can you help me with this project? And can you help me with that project? And then the next thing you know, wow. You've got, yeah. And so it happened really organically. And to be honest with you, 15, 16 years later, it's still organic. It's still kind of running on that same premise. So I didn't break away. I didn't create a business plan. I didn't go to a bank and ask for a loan to start the business. I, you know, it just kind of started by accident or organic growth. So that's the way it happened to me.
Well, it sounds to me like a very viable plan, because I wonder if a person couldn't intentionally plan a very similar path that they really thought about it, right?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think, you know, as I look back, you know, hindsight says, hey, it was actually easier, you know, I don't know how to say this correctly, because I know it's difficult to start a business and run a business, but it was almost easier to start it than it has been to grow it. And that's kind of a weird thing, right? Because usually most people equate the fear of starting a business, right? And the fear comes because they have to quit what they're doing, or they have to launch something from nothing. But for me, it was just the opposite. It's actually been easier to start it and get it up and running than it has been to really grow it to the point that I'd like it to be.
And you said it did happen, I mean, very organically, but growing up, did you have any kind of entrepreneurial tendencies? I mean, did you start a lemonade stand or do anything that maybe signaled to you that one day you would start your own business?
You know, again, hindsight, you kind of look back and you kind of marry these stories up and maybe you embellish them or invent them. But, you know, there were a couple of times. So my brother and I, again, go back to my stories. We used to cut grass quite a bit and we'd run around with the lawnmower and cut everybody's lawn for money. But I do remember distinctly one year my brother went on a vacation separately and I stayed home and my dad kind of gave us these competitions, right? He said, oh, well, if your brother is not, you know, cutting the grass, you get all of the money, right? And so I remember this just, you know, competitive nature to see how much I could actually gain while he was gone and see how much more I could make. And so it's just fun. We like to talk about that during Thanksgiving and things of that nature. And then, you know, and then at the end of the summer, we turn around and blow it on, you know, new sure. bikes or whatever
of course,
else.
But, yeah. Of course, of course.
Now, early on, you reached out to friends, people you knew and trusted. Yeah. But as you grew, I'm operating under the impression you had to recruit, select, develop. Talk to us about what that's been like for you, you know, hiring so that they're the right fit for your culture,
yeah.
for your
yeah. benefit. You know, over the years, the hiring and the people management side of the business has been I'm not gonna say the difficult part, but it has been almost more difficult than necessarily bringing in money and making a profit, right? What keeps you up at night is, or at least what keeps me up at night is, you know, are my employees happy? Am I giving them a good place to work? Am I giving them the freedom to do what they need to do for their own selves as well as for the company? And one of the things we kept running into is that I've been very lucky to have three or four people on our team that have been with us almost since the very beginning. And I'm saying, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 years of service with a small 15-year shop is pretty amazing. And so, We had a good stable of those people on the team, but then we realized that there was a bit of a revolving door with a couple of the other seats that we kind of needed. And I kind of struggled to figure out, well, why do some people fit really well and other people's aren't? Other people aren't necessarily fitting. And so what we decided to do is reach out and have some personality reviews done. And so we had personality reviews of everybody on the team. And then we kind of shared those openly with everyone so we could all understand, well, what kind of personality do I have? And what kind of personality do you have? And how do those gel? Or how do they not gel? And how can we do a better job at bringing our personalities together? And then what we did is after we took that information, we created a bit of a chart. And we said, well, if we're going to hire this new person, what are the skills that they need? And what type of personality would fit with our team that we have in place? So not necessarily, you know, do they have a great portfolio? Are they an amazing person in the one-time interview? But how can they relate to all these four or five other people as well as our clients? How do they fit in with the team that we have today? And we started that about 2 years ago, and I think it has really, really, really helped. It just gives you a quick insight on how their personality may act when they face a certain situation.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, as you might imagine, the topic of diversity comes up a lot in this room, both with respect to gender, with respect to race, heritage, that, and all those things need to be addressed, and I think we need to be aware of them. But I wonder if at least I'm a little bit guilty, I think, of not thinking through the value of diversity in this mindset, personality, whatever the label is, because that can be tremendously helpful to a business too, to have people who look at a problem and deal with a situation.
Yeah, absolutely. We think about it. And that's what the personality test kind of brings to our attention, right? I'm not necessarily trying to hire, I mean, I'm always trying to hire the best person for the job, but I'm also hiring for a spot. Right, I have a need. I have a, you know. So let's use myself. I'll kind of a quick anecdote on how the personality test came about. So with my personality, one of the traits that comes up is kind of your thinking speed. Right. So I don't know if you've heard this before. We've talked about this, but in some ways, I process information a bit slower. Right. For me, I'm agonizing over all the details. I'm agonizing over the cost. I'm agonizing over, is the client the right fit? I'm agonizing over, can we fit this in, right? And so if somebody brings me a problem, they need to understand that I'm going to sit with it for a minute, right? I'm going to, you know, boil this up. But if I'm hiring for an account manager, I don't want somebody like me, right? I want somebody different because I don't want the account manager to agonize over the conversation they're having with the client. I need somebody who has a high rate of thinking speed, right? I want them to be able to process information very quickly, come up with really solid answers kind of on the fly, and then be able to, you know, disseminate or bring that information to the right people that need it within the agency.
How difficult is it then? I mean, because you're looking to fill a need and you're also looking for particular personality traits to kind of mesh with the rest of your team. So how difficult is it actually to find that kind of perfect individual to fill those roles?
Well, I mean, like I said earlier, we were having a problem doing that, right? We would interview these people, and now we do have a pretty lengthy interview process. It's two or three different interviews at different levels. So we felt like we were doing a really good job trying to learn what these people are like and how they're going to work. But we were still missing something. So when we do this personality survey, it kind of gives us a key insight on how they'll react in different situations and then how they gel with the team. And so we'll create a chart. And so one of the things, if we're a particular position, say a proofreader or a copywriter in some sense, right? They need a high level of being detail oriented, mm-hmm. right? If they don't fall within this scale of detail orientation, we'll probably put them on the back burner and keep looking until we find somebody that has a high level of detail. And so what we found in the past, in the last couple of years, it's worked for us. So the three people that we've hired by using this tool are still with us today. And it's been helping.
So you haven't really come up against any real issues where maybe it's on paper or through the personality test, they seem perfect, but then you've brought them on and maybe it wasn't really working out? Or, I mean, does it work pretty well, that test?
I mean, for us, it's almost just the opposite. It's the once you see the personality test and you see where they fall, and again, for me, who somebody's really thinking about every single bucket, when I see that somebody is, let's just say, maybe more assertive, right? So if they score high on the assertive scale, right, what does that tell you is, well, as a manager, right, they're not going to be a yes person, right? They're going to probably tell you exactly how they feel and when they feel it and what they would do differently, right? So it's interesting that we look at this and we say, well, maybe assertive is okay, right? We need somebody to be able to push back. But then as a manager, you think, well, how am I going to manage that constant kind of conflict? So it's never that they've worked out differently.
Right.
It's what's come up on the test is exactly who they are.
And so as you've grown your team and you've been able to expand for you in particular. So you started off with graphic design. So do you get to really do that predominantly or is it really just now running the business, managing it, or do you get to still do graphic design?
Oh man, I get in the way.
Yeah.
I get in the way. So, you know, I try to guide the graphic design. I mean, it's still, you know, all aspects of running the business are absolutely exciting to me, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I still love the tangibility of kind of seeing something come to life.
Yeah.
And so what I try to do is give my ideas or my thoughts to the designers that are on the team, but ultimately it's gotta be their idea. It's gotta be something that they've developed so that they can get behind it and keep pushing it. But I love to kind of put my fingerprint all over it in some cases. So
how does the whole sales and marketing thing work for the marketing agency? Does it make it harder? Is it easier?
Yeah, you know, our story is the beginning. You know, I told you we grew kind of organically, right? So I wasn't really focused on sales or marketing really at all. I was very fortunate for the first probably 10 years or so that the phone was just ringing and that my connections were coming to me. So like I said, again, it wasn't too difficult to get it up and running. But lately when you say, well, I've met this goal, what is that next goal? How can we keep pushing it? Well, then you have to start to think, well, why aren't we marketing for ourselves? Why aren't we saying, hey, come look at us and give us a shot? And so about 2 or 3 years ago, we brought on a part-time sales or new business development person, right? So we started that. And then the second thing you start doing is start raising our hands, right? Doing like today, yeah, right? Coming out there is kind of raising your hand and saying, hey, we exist. And so I don't think it's harder or any real different marketing any other product or service. It's just a matter of doing it.
So who do you want to have those conversations with? What's the potential client that...
Yeah. For us, I mean, it can range. We do a lot of different types of stuff. Predominantly, again, we work with the Fortune 100 or 500 companies, or we're working with manufacturers who sell into these retailers. Uh-huh. So the majority of the time we're working with small marketing teams of a product manufacturer, or we're working for the large in-house marketing, branding, advertising teams of Fortune 100 companies. So our ideal client would be a brand manager that is trying to get brands refreshed or breathe new life or create new brands and put them into retail.
But your salesperson, I mean, this person must really be good. I mean, you can't just, or maybe I'm wrong. You can't just pick up the phone and call the brand manager Coca-Cola, right?
Well, that's a tactic that I'm sure has been used before. It's not one that we use, but yeah. I mean, so there's different ways. I mean, again, we're on social, we're on, you know, all the social media channels. We create newsletters and email blasts and things of that nature.
And you've
to
got
reach
great
out.
Track record. It's not like, hey, we got this idea. We think that we can, I mean, you've got some.
Yeah. I don't think we're doing anything new and revolutionary in the world of sales and marketing. I think, you know, one of the biggest things that we do is we have our niche, right? We understand who our target is. And so we try to focus on that. And in most cases, they kind of hear of us before we've even reached out to them because we're in their circle. So we're running that same circle. So it's not like we're having to reach out to people that wouldn't be in our industry in a sense. So that definitely helps is knowing your market and staying focused on that particular market.
So what's next for you? Where are you going to put most of your energy in the coming, I don't know, 6 to 18 months? Anything in particular?
Yeah, there's a couple things. So one of the things is really trying to figure out, kind of like you had mentioned a minute ago, is how to continue to market and sell Porchlight and its services, and how do we kind of raise our hand to let people know that we exist and what we do and who we do it for, and a little bit of the personal branding as well for myself. and try to figure out how the personal brand of Greg kind of elevates Porchlight altogether. So that's what we're going to be working on the next 12 months.
He's got to write that book, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No, a lot of professional services people come through here. We're interviewing an author later today, yeah. Right? So we see a lot of people who write books, and we've had a couple who have talked the book and then transcribed it and then made that to book. So that's an idea for you. Yeah.
All right. Next time I'll come in and pitch the book.
There you go. Sounds perfect. All right. So where can our listeners go if they want to learn more about your outfit, talk to somebody on your team? What's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can find us on the web. It's porchlightatl.com or all the social channels at porchlightatl.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming and sharing your story, man.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
It was fun. This is just fun to do, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I definitely love it.
It beats the heck out of having a real job, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Let's do it again, maybe at noon.
Okay, sounds good.
We'll interview that author, right?
Sounds good.
Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
All right, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Katie Galley, our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.